welcome to Travel Fun. My name is Mary Beth Clementi, and I'm the host of this talk show on travel. And this week, I'm taking you to the ocean, to the big blue seas. And I have Dr. Wallace J. Nichols on the phone from California. I refer to him as a marine biologist extraordinaire because this is a man I met at Mountain Film a few years ago here in Telluride, and he just loves the ocean, marine life, and he's a big defender of the Big Blue and is very much involved in it. So in this season of water, sand, sea, and surf, I wanted to talk with him and find out about our oceans, how they're doing, and how we can better take care of them during our travels. I would like to welcome Dr. Wallace J. Nichols to Travel Fun. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how are you? Thanks Good. For having me back.
Yes, and I'll say right off, you like to be referred to as Jay.
Yep, everybody just calls me Jay, just the letter.
Let's get to the big stuff right off. And I want to ask you, how do we take better care of our oceans and coastal areas?
Well, I think it's really quite clear that our ocean is in trouble. Even just this past month, we've had some new big reports and publications on the state of the ocean, and it's really not good. But I don't really want to dwell on all the things that are bad. I'd rather talk about all the things we can do. So really what it comes down to is we're putting too much into the ocean. We're taking too much out of the ocean, and we're destroying the edge of the ocean where most of the life and biodiversity occurs. And so, you know, the obvious call to action would be put less in, take less out, and protect the edge. And there are some pretty simple ways we can all participate in that by reducing the amount of plastic we use, by being really careful about what we eat in terms of seafood, and by supporting initiatives to create marine protected areas, which are sort of national parks or state parks in the ocean. Those would be my three calls to action for anybody listening.
That is certainly very clear and concise. It is. Can't ask for it in more simple terms than that. And I've covered the movie Bagot a number of times on my radio show and also on my blog, bonjourcolorado.com. And I'm not sure whether you saw it, but that was a big wake-up call for many people about plastic and how most of it ends up in the ocean. And so we're trying to get the word out about reducing consumption of plastic. Let's talk about eating seafood, because certainly it's summer. Even people here in the Rocky Mountains, you know, they have big lobster fests over 4th of July weekend. And, you know, people think of warm weather and they think of seafood, and it kind of goes with it. What should we know about that?
There's a lot of information available for people who like to eat seafood. And you know, the Monterey Bay Aquarium has a seafood watch program. You can download the app to your smartphone, and you can get little cards to put in your wallet if you prefer that help you make better decisions and pick the seafood that's considered most sustainable. My shortcut and rule of thumb is basically comes down to avoiding the number one seafood in the U.S., which is shrimp. Eating shrimp is probably the most harmful thing you can do to the ocean, unless you choose the shrimp that are caught most sustainably. A lot of wild shrimp are caught using bottom trawlers, which kill basically everything in their wake, or through shrimp farms, which often destroy coastal mangroves. So when you buy shrimp, and a lot of people love to eat shrimp, You need to ask a lot of questions and be careful. And I just want to point out that by saying this, I really want to support the shrimp farmers and shrimp fishers who are doing it right. But they're in the small minority, and you know I think we really need to be careful of which kind of shrimp we buy. But just speak up when you're in the store and say, hey, how was this shrimp caught? How is this shrimp farmed? Where did it come from? And can I get more information before I buy it? And that's really, we have the power to do that. We need to use it.
And would you, are there certain areas where shrimp comes from that the shrimp is more sustainable, or is it kind of random?
We could spend the next hour kind of picking through all the details of it. There's some shrimp from Oregon that are good, and all around the country you'll find little pockets of sustainable shrimping.
Okay.
Then there's some closed system shrimp farming that seems good. And then there's some innovative stuff that's not available in the stores yet, but people doing shrimp farming in pods, actually underwater pods, that I'm pretty excited about. But really what you want is no bycatch, no other dead animals with your shrimp. That makes sense, right? And no mangrove forest clearing with your shrimp. So it's important to ask and find out as much as you can. I think once you look into the shrimp industry, it'll freak you out, and you'll be really careful about what kind of shrimp you buy. But given that it's the number one seafood in the U.S., it's a good place to start the seafood conversation. And some people are already beyond that point and are card-carrying Seafood Watch Guide folks, and that's great. But for those who have never even thought about questioning their seafood, I think shrimp is a really good place to start.
Okay. Just hearing you talk about that, I'm kind of thinking in the years to come, and we might start readily talking about sustainable shrimp the way we talk about organic foods now.
Exactly. Yeah, I think it's all together. I think, you know, your shrimp, your organic foods, all of the seafood, what it's wrapped in, how much plastic is used. You know, you can buy organic apples these days individually wrapped in hard plastic containers. That's kind of weird. And I think that sort of throws the whole organic thing out the window when they're wrapped in disposable plastic. So all these issues do connect. The fossil fuels used to catch shrimp and transport them from faraway places to places like Telluride, all of these issues connect up. And I guess it comes down to supporting your local businesses, the people who make food, who grow food, and buying it with the least amount of packaging possible and the least amount of fossil fuel used in transporting it.
Not to dwell on what we should and shouldn't be eating, but if you could just toss out a couple of other either species of fish or types of seafood that we should, be careful about.
Yeah, people are not used to eating the small fish, the sardines, the fast-growing species like sardines and anchovies. But what I've seen lately is all the hip, cool, sustainable chefs in the San Francisco area are getting creative with species like sardines because they're high in omega-3s, they're fast-growing, versus the species that take a really long time to get big and may accumulate toxins. So I would just steer people towards, away from shrimp and towards some of the more quick-growing, small, high omega-3 species. And you just have to get a little bit more creative in how they're prepared. But it's really good stuff to eat. And the sardines with pasta and marinara sauce, it's a good choice. So that would be my general recommendation without getting into specific species that might be hard to find.
Okay, sounds good. When I met you a few years ago, I remember you talking about the connection between the mountains and the sea. And that kind of stuck with me, that no matter where we are, to think of the connection with the sea. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, we are on an ocean planet, you know, from a million miles away. The Earth looks like a little blue marble. And no matter where we are on that marble, we should remember that it is an ocean planet. Oceans sort of dictate our weather, our climate, they're the birthplace of life. Everything kind of goes back to the ocean eventually when our chemicals or trash end up in our rivers in the mountains. They go downstream and eventually make their way to the ocean. So, you know, we're all connected to the ocean, and it's nice to remind yourself of that, especially when you live in a place that seems far away from the ocean. You're really not that far away. Your activities are connected to the ocean in lots of ways. And I know a lot of people who live in high-altitude places or Midwestern places who long for the ocean, and they plan some of their travel to the ocean to get that hit of oceanness. And there's some pretty interesting reasons why we like the ocean so much, and has to do with what the ocean does to our brain. It helps us relax, remove stress. It's an appealing place to spend time and to unwind. And we're learning more and more about that recently by working with neuroscientists and sort of investigating the brain on ocean. And it's kind of exciting new work.
That is. Just hearing you talk, I feel the lull of the sea.
Even the word ocean makes people relax.
It does. Okay, here's a question that might be a little tough. I'm not sure I want to hear the answer, but I think I have to ask it. What are your thoughts on cruises and cruise ships?
You know, the cruise industry has just sort of boomed in the last 20 years or so. And I'm frankly in awe of the ships that are, you know, three or four giant resorts. It's pretty phenomenal when you think about it, that there are ships with, you know, concert halls and bowling alleys and multiple swimming pools and rock climbing walls and all of that, all on one ship floating around. And so on one hand, I'm in awe, and then on the other hand, I wonder, you know, about the energy and waste. So, you know, I would say, like everything, choose carefully. You know, if you're going to take a cruise, pick one that represents who you are and represents your values. If you love the ocean, then pick a cruise that reflects that, and support a company that's doing their part to take care of the ocean and not wreck it. And you know, that's not really my style of vacationing, so I can't really offer specifics as to which, you know, which outfitters or cruise lines are the most environmentally sound. But you know, it's like everything, just be careful and ask a lot of questions and make the choices that reflect your core values, and I think you'll be in good shape. The last thing I think people want to hear on the radio is a list of don't. So
I won't
do that, but I'll just, you know, kind of go back. Because same thing as the seafood conversation, you know. Inform yourself a bit. Have fun in the process. There's a lot of interesting stuff to learn about our planet. And make the choices that reflect who you are. And hopefully those will be the ones that are good for the ocean.
And it all begins with awareness and raising our conscious level.
Definitely.
And then we can, you know, either choose to act or not.
Or not, right. And some, you know, some people choose to put the blinders on and just dive in and And yeah, they have lots of reasons for doing that. And other people obsess over every little detail, and they want to know, you know, everything about everything before they make a choice. And most of us are kind of in between, and we try to make the best choices as we go through the day, whether it's packaging, seafood, organic produce, or where and how we vacation.
I am visiting with Dr. Wallace J. Nichols, referred to as Jay. The website is wallacejnichols.org. And we're going to take a short break and be right back.
The words that break beneath the watery explosions, under the spell of the greens and the blues. I can't be intruding, although I know I come to love the waves, if only she would introduce me. Selfish dreaming has always been.
Hello, and welcome back to Travel Fun. I am visiting with Dr. Wallace J. Nichols, marine biologist. And let me back up a little bit, Jay, and ask you, how did you become so passionate about the oceans and marine life?
Well, I was a big fan of Jacques Cousteau as a kid. Had some pretty formative experiences in and around water, and like a lot of people, just dreamed about being a marine biologist as a possibility, and then just went for it. And over time, you fall deeper in love with the ocean, and then realize that, wow, there's a lot that needs to be done. There's a lot of cool research to do, but there's also a need for strong advocacy and some serious changes in the way we relate to and treat the ocean. And so I just started down that path, and it's been a wonderful career so far, I guess you'd say. But also, there's a sad part to it too, because we're seeing more and more problems. So the challenge is to keep your head up and find those beautiful places that feed you and keep you optimistic. Fortunately, I work with an amazing group of people around the world who are very inspiring, and that's the other part of what keeps me optimistic, is meeting people who are working so hard and having some success at what they do. So the ocean itself is inspiring, and then the people we meet around the world are.
Talk about your work with sea turtles.
Well, I guess you would say a turtle freak. I really, really like sea turtles, and I can't really explain why exactly, but I like them a lot. I like learning about them. I like seeing them. I like taking people to see them. And my friend Brad Nahill and I realized that there's no better way to help protect sea turtles than to take people to see them in the right way and have them figure out how they're going to help. And so we started something called C-S-E-E, turtles.org, which has grown into something called See the Wild, which extends beyond sea turtles. And basically the idea is to help people go see the animals they love in places where their visit can really help, and in a way that does no harm to the animals. So we've put together this sort of, portal website called seethewild.org that helps people who just want to go themselves or take their families. be an animal like sea turtle or whales or sharks or big cats or birds, and find places to do that in a way that really helps those animals. And it's been a really fun project, and we've touched a lot of people, changed a lot of lives in small ways and big ways, and supported some local conservation projects in the process.
Would you give a specific example, maybe talk about a certain tour or program and,
sure.
and how it benefits the creatures and also the native people?
Yeah, one of the tours that's really close to my experiences and my heart is the Baja trip. And I've worked in Baja with sea turtles and former sea turtle hunters and fishermen for 20 years. And the group that goes to Baja goes and spends time working with former turtle hunters who are now studying turtles and protecting them and doing quite a good job. And part of the way they fund that effort is through these small occasional tours. And people go to Baja and camp, you know, comfortably on this island called Shell Island in Magdalena Bay, and work side by side with the fishermen who are monitoring the sea turtles. So you get your feet wet and your hands on sea turtles, and it's amazing, you know, sitting around the campfire talking to a group of people who not long ago were professional turtle hunters who are now professional turtle protectors, and hanging out with those animals. And it's not just turtles. They're, depending on the time of year, there are gray whales and bottlenose dolphins and some of the best birding in North America. And it's just a great experience. And the people who have done it just have come back and said, wow, that was the best vacation of my life. I learned a lot. I had a great time. The food was really good. The camping was awesome. And the people I met were really inspiring. So that's the example of the kind of expedition we try to organize.
Okay. And that's at seaturtles.org,
yep.
and also seethewild.org.
Right.
Jay, you are a great communicator. Not only are you a very articulate person, but I don't know how you keep up with your blog and you tweet. And I want people to check out your website, wallacejnichols.org. First of all, why don't you give your Twitter account in case people want to sign up for that?
It's Wallace J. Nichols at, you know, it's at Wallace J. Nichols, and the letter J is just the letter J.
Okay. And what kinds of things do you write about on your blog?
Well, I do a fair amount of writing for different newspapers and other blogs, and I use my blog to kind of bring all that stuff together. But, you know, I try to explain clearly what's going on with the planet from an ocean perspective, how I feel about it personally, and provide ways forward and rather than just gloom and doom. So I have two kids. I tend to write about them a bit, two daughters who travel with me quite a bit, so they end up being characters in my writing, because they are quite the characters, and they say things that are insightful and funny. Just teaching them about the ocean and teaching them about what's going on our planet is, I learn a lot from that. So I'd like to share that with kids and other adults. I really just write how I feel and write about the things I love, which tend to be oceanic and coastal and turtly sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Of course, you're a big traveler, and you chronicle a lot of this in your blog and on your site. Where have you gone recently, and what have you been doing?
Well, I just got back from about 21 days on the road. Took my daughter Grace, who's 9, to Singapore and Indonesia, and then we sailed to a group of islands called the Anambas Islands on a 110-foot, 100-year-old ship, and we did some sea turtle research and working on a coral reef protection effort with the government there and an NGO called the Biosphere Foundation. It's been a great project that I've been working on for the past 3 years. And I came back, touched down in California, and went to Central America and worked with the Plastic Pollution Coalition to raise awareness about what plastic is doing to us and our cities and towns and our beaches and oceans. And we went to Nicaragua, Guatemala, and Costa Rica and talked to a lot of people and worked with national NGOs, raising awareness about plastic pollution and talking about the solutions. It turns out there are some pretty easy solutions to a lot of the single-use plastic we have in our lives. Like you mentioned, Bag-It, you know, bringing your own bag or water bottle, making choices, you know, picking products that use less packaging, asking your favorite company or business or restaurant to try to go plastic-free. There are just some really easy ways to cut your plastic footprint in half. And we're just talking about that in Central America and encouraging those businesses that are already engaged to do a little more and helping them get recognized.
Do you think people are waking up about this?
Yeah, it's starting to. You know, I get a little, you probably feel this way in Telluride, you get a little feeling like you're in a bubble sometimes, and you know, people around you know about these issues, and they're carrying their own water bottle. And then you travel a little bit, and you realize that, wow, we've got a super long way to go. But so on one hand, yes, you know, we have documentaries like Bag-It about this issue, and we're doing press conferences in Central America, and that's great. But there's still such a long way to go. I would say the problem's still getting worse. We haven't made that turn over the hump where it's really getting better. And I look forward to that, but we have a long way to go. We can't shut up about it. We need to communicate as much as we can and do it in a way that builds the movement, that doesn't bum people out or turn people off. And so as I tell my kids all the time, it's just be kind, be nice to people and explain what's going on and help them figure out a way forward from wherever they are. It's not that complicated, but it's certainly not gonna happen if we're jerks. So you have to be nice and kind and you know, build that effort, build the movement.
And thank goodness we have people like you, Jay, you know, big defender of the big blue. Uh-huh. I have been visiting with Wallace J. Nichols, marine biologist, and the website is wallacejnichols.org. And also we talked about conservation tourism, and those sites are seaturtles.org and seethewild.org. And I will be putting this interview up as a podcast at my blog, and that's bonjourcolorado.com. So there you go with the links. Jay, thank you so much. Do you have anything, any parting message you'd like to leave us with or anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to the Colorado Ocean Coalition. This is a group, you can find them on Facebook. There's a group of people who love the ocean who are living around the state of Colorado, and they get together and drink a few beers and talk about their experiences and these, talk about these issues and talk about travel. And it's an ocean loving group of folks in Colorado, and it just reminds us that you can love the ocean and do your part from anywhere, even from the highest point in the state of Colorado. how you can engage in these issues. So if you're interested in becoming networked with that group, look them up on Facebook and get connected.
Okay, thanks for that information. I'll be sure to put that up on my blog. Jay, continued success and best of luck with your endeavors. And
likewise.
Thanks for being a guest on Travel Fun.
Thanks for having me.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.